Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Thursday, January 4th, 2018. I'm your host, Scott Burton. Thanks for tuning in. On today's show, we'll talk with Tony Newman and Bennett about the 20th anniversary celebration of the Juno Community Charter School. Pat Hartman will give us details about the Juno Garden Club's next event. Claire Imamura from the Alaska Historical Library will talk about Friday's family fair at the APK building. And Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. Those interviews, national native news, bird note music, and more right here live and local on a Juno afternoon. Currently 35 degrees with rain, fog, and mist here in the capital city.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Northern Arapaho and Eastern Shoshone tribes recently held a conference to empower their community to stand up against drugs and alcohol. The Crow Tribe of Montana passed on a war staff to the Wyoming tribes. The tribes believe the staff, prayer, and events such as the conference can help address addiction, safety, and community healing. Dara Perez reports.
Sunny Goggles, director of the White Buffalo Program, says further education about drugs and alcohol is important.
Think about it in a different perspective, because we know that what we're dealing with is not just a substance. It's actually an entity in itself, and we have to treat it like that.
The War Staff Symposium attracted a large crowd, many of them young people. Goggles says the average onset of substance use on the reservation is 9 years old, and that early exposure to drugs may be one reason why the life expectancy of Wind River tribal members is only 51 years of age. The Northern Arapaho and Eastern Shoshone Housing Authorities attended the conference, too, and discussed ways to fight drugs and alcohol in their housing units. Francis Blackburn, an investigator for the Eastern Shoshone Department of Family Service, also works for the Northern Arapaho Housing Authority as a patrol officer. She says sometimes homes are no longer habitable because of methamphetamine use.
I do know that it happens, and when it does happen, you see a lot of units boarded up on our in our housing projects. The majority of them, that's the reason, is because of meth.
She says testing positive for meth would result in a family receiving a 24-hour eviction notice. Testing has started with the Eastern Shoshone Housing Authority, where hazmat training has allowed them to become certified to test housing units to uncover meth use. But the cost for the agency is high, from $8,000 to $10,000 to clean each unit. Robert Friday is one of the certified hazmat meth testers for the Eastern Shoshone tribe.
We're more worried about air quality within our units, so that way the next person that's drug-free and been drug-free their whole life can move into a house that hasn't had meth smoked in it.
A lack of housing is a real problem for tribes nationwide, leading to overcrowding and homelessness. A recent study found nationally, tribes are in need of 68,000 more new homes. For National Native News, I'm Dara Perez on the Wind River Reservation in Wyoming.
In Montana, the Northern Cheyenne Tribe has re-elected its ousted tribal president. The Billings Gazette reports Jace Kilsback narrowly won Tuesday's special election. Preliminary results show. The tribal council removed Kilsback in October after accusing him of multiple violations, including neglect. Kilsback won the election by 2 votes. If it's not challenged, he would take office this month. Construction recently began for new homes in the former Bennett Freeze area on the Navajo Nation. In the 1960s, the federal government froze development on more than 1 million acres of land in Arizona due to disputes between the Navajo and Hopi tribes. It was lifted in 2009 by President Obama. Since then, the Navajo Nation has been working on revitalizing the area. Construction is underway for 36 new homes. Navajo tribal leaders say the more than 40-year freeze oppressed the community and prevented families from construction and renovating houses and other buildings. This month, we're wrapping up our USC Annenberg Center for Health Journalism series. Last fall, we teamed up with New Mexico PBS for the series to explore health and wellness efforts in the Southwest, on the grassroots level, by tribal programs, and other initiatives to address the health outcomes of Native people. We want to keep the conversation going on health and wellness in Indian country, and we'd like to hear from you. Visit our Facebook page to join the discussion. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support for journalism that raises the awareness of child well-being to citizens and to policymakers provided by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, building a brighter future for children, families, and communities. Information at aecf.org. Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, January 4th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes after the hour. Joining me in the studio now is Tony Newman and Bennett, and we're going to be talking about the Juno Community Charter School and their 20th anniversary coming up in a celebration. I guess it is their 20th anniversary and a celebration coming up on Saturday, January 13th. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thanks, Scott.
Yeah,
thank you.
Nice to have you here. So 20 years, Tony, when did the community charter school start and where?
The charter school started, it was a glimmer in folks' eyes after the, I understand after the Capitol School, the Terry Miller building there behind the Capitol in Juneau closed, a group of parents came together appreciating the small community that that school allowed them to have, and started talking about what do we really want out of a school for our kids in Juneau. And the charter school laws were new in Alaska, so they learned an awful lot about the laws and how to put a school together, and talked in a lot about what they wanted to see in a school, parent involvement, arts-based curriculum, all the things that, research shows create a real good school experience for kids they wanted to put together and do. So in 1997, the school opened its doors. I understand it started out in a couple of trailers in the valley somewhere, but it evolved. It moved eventually into the Articore building on Harrison 4th Street, and that's where it remains today.
Okay. Very interesting. Let's see, and you came into the story maybe 5 years later, you said?
Right. My son was born the same year that the charter school started, and 5 years later he began as a kindergartner. We applied. It's a public school, but because it's a small school, people enter the charter school by application. So we applied. We landed on the wait list, and it has been an immersive and incredible experience ever since. He went there. He graduated from eighth grade. My second and third children also have gone there. Now my third is an eighth grader about to leave. So after 15 years, we're getting ready to bid adieu to the school as active families. So we're eager to celebrate with friends we've made in the past and have now from the school.
Okay, we'll get the details on the celebration here in a few minutes. In the meantime, Bennett, you're an eighth grader there, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay, tell us a little bit about your day at the charter school. What's it like?
Well, we start at 8:45, and we each split up into different classes, and then we join back together to have lunch in our classrooms.
Okay. What's one of your favorite classes at the school?
P.E.
I think that was my favorite class in eighth grade, too. where do you guys, what kind of activities do you do in P.E. class?
We start out with stretches most of the time, and we do small games at first, like tag or something, and then we play dodgeball or something like that.
That sounds a lot like my PE class, too, in public school. Yeah, Tony?
You know, one of the neatest things about the charter school is the expectation and the hope that parents will participate in the classroom, assisting the teachers, helping with recess, monitoring lunch, in all kinds of ways. And it's so cool to sit here with Bennett, having met him as a kindergartner and been able to be in his classroom every week from the time he was 5 or 6 years old, And now to be able to see him, this tall young man, getting ready to graduate and go to high school. It's been a great experience.
If one of our listeners has a little one that they would like to, you know, maybe enroll in the school, how do they go about doing that?
You apply through the Juneau School District. They have an alternative programs application process.
Okay. Yeah. And you mentioned parent involvement a few times. That sounds like sort of a foundation for this school. What did that mean for you? How often would you go in and participate?
Well, parents and teachers working together set the goals for the classroom and set the needs. So for me, I work full-time, but I also work fairly close to the charter school. So every week at lunchtime, I journey over there, and I'm able to let the teacher take a break. We check in about how things are going in the class, and teacher takes a break, and I join the kids for lunch and then join them out on the playground for recess. And it gets me gives me an opportunity to get to know my daughter's friends and classmates and check in with her teacher and really establish a good, strong relationship both with the kids and with her. So that's how I do it. My wife, Linda, serves on the board for the charter schools. That's how she provides a lot of her time. But she also pitches in, asks the teachers how she can help in the classroom as well. So,
what's that like for you, Bennett, as a student, seeing your parents and friends' parents at the school?
I think it's a cool opportunity because I have some friends at the charter school that I don't necessarily always get to go over to their house, but I still get to meet their parents.
Okay. And so let's see, you're in eighth grade, so next year it's off to high school. Where are you thinking about going?
I'm going to go to Thunder Mountain.
Uh-huh. And may I ask what helped you make that choice between there and JD?
My sisters, my mom were like, made us all go to TM because it was closer to our house for the first year for freshmen, and then if we wanted, we can go to JD. But my sisters both stayed, and they convinced me to stay at Thunder Mountain.
Okay. Well, best of luck with that. All right, so this 20th anniversary celebration is coming up. Tony, you want to give us the details, please?
Sure. Like I said, the charter school began in 1997, and here we are just finishing 2017, so that's 20 years. And so we are having a birthday celebration, a reunion, a dinner, a party at the Juneau Douglas High School Commons on January 13th, starting at 6 p.m. We are hoping that any friend, former student, former family, former staffer of the charter school, current families, current students, will come celebrate with us. The good folks at Mari Soul, the new food truck down at the Foodland Center, are going to cater the meal. It's going to be a fundraiser, but it's not. There's no cost to come on into the party. We wanted to make sure everyone was welcome and felt like they could come in whether they wanted dinner or not. But Mari Soul will be making us a Mexican dinner, and that'll be $15. And we're going to have a program at 7 o'clock where we tell stories and remembrances and hear some music from kids, both grown and still young. Frankie Pilafont and Kathy Munoz, who were two of the founding parents, they're going to come and share some remembrances with us. But mostly we want to make sure there's time for people to connect and talk with each other and enjoy one another's company.
Excellent. So, again, that's Saturday, January 13th.
Correct.
From 6 to 9.
Yes.
At the JDHS Commons.
Yes, and if anybody out there listening hasn't gotten a word or invitation and has a relationship with the charter school or is curious about the charter school, I would encourage them to check the charter school's Facebook page. It's the Juneau Community Charter School is the formal name, and if you check the Facebook page, you'll see the invitation and a form that we ask people to fill out so we can know how many to expect for dinner.
Now, you're both, in a sense, sort of graduating, right, from the charter school. Bennett, you're going on high school. Your children, Tony, are graduating. What do you hope for the school's future? This goes to either of you. I want to start with you, Tony.
I'll start. I hope that it will continue to thrive, that parents will continue to realize that they will get the most out of their child's education if they participate in their child's education, and that the teachers there will continue to take that extra step. It's not always easy to work with parents in the way that the charter school does. The parents and teachers work together on a board, and they work together in the classroom, and sometimes it can be messy and hard, but I think the rewards are that's certainly been apparent to me. My kids have really benefited from the school, so I really hope to see that continue.
Bennett?
I think that when I think that I hope that we would still be able to have the full, like, all the classes come together and read together and have do activities together still. And, yeah.
The community part of the Juneau Community Charter School. All right, find them on Facebook. It sounds like it's the best place, Tony. Or meet them on January 13th from 6 to 9 at the JDHS Commons area. Tony Bennett, thanks for coming on the show. Have we missed anything?
No, thanks for having us today.
All right, thanks, guys.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard and hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone. The guy behind you won't leave you alone. Ring, ring goes the bell. The cook in the lunchroom's ready to sell. You're lucky if you can find a seat. You're fortunate if you have time to eat. Back in the classroom, open your book. See, but the teacher don't know how mean she looks. Soon as 3 o'clock rolls around, you finally lay your burden down. Close up your books, get out of your seat. Down the halls and into the street. Up to the corner and round the bend. To the juke joint you go in. Drop the coin right into the slot. You gotta hear something that's really hot. With the one you love, you're making romance. All day long you've been wanting to dance. Feeling the music from head to toe. Something that's really hot. With the one you love, you're making romance. All day long you've been wanting to dance. Feeling the music from head to toe. Round and round and round you go. Hail, hail, rock and roll. Deliver me from the days of old. Drums loud and cold.
This broadcast is sponsored in part by Ron's Apothecary at the Mendenhall Mall. Serving Juneau since 1978, Ron's Apothecary is providing medication information, nutritional supplements, and homeopathic remedies. More information at ronsapothecary.com.
You're tuned into a Juneau afternoon here on Thursday, January 4th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 18 minutes past the top of the hour. My next guest is Pat Hartman. She is a board member of the Juneau Garden Club. We're going to be talking about the club in general and an event this Saturday called Success with Succulents. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Thanks, Scott. It's so nice to be here.
All right. So Juneau Garden Club, tell us about it.
Well, they actually started, they were founded in 1927, so last year they celebrated, I guess that would be 90 years. And a whole lot is not known in the early years, but in 1946 they actually started keeping records that are in the state library. So we have one of our members, Alfreda Nord, who has been doing research down at the library and putting a history together for us. So.
Okay. When did you join, if I may ask?
I've only been a member for 3 years.
Okay. And what inspired you to join? I'm just wondering, you know, I think about often gardening can be sort of a solitary thing in your own space, but, you know, why join the club?
Well, I was in the Master Gardeners, and I joined the Juneau Garden Club as kind of an additional club to join, and I've been in garden clubs in other areas. So difference between the two, I think the garden clubs are a lot more service oriented. They're more for your basic gardeners that like to basically share information. There's a lot of cross between the two. And, you know, Garden Club, with that 90 years, started and founded a lot of things that the master gardeners carry on, but they're very community oriented. And so it's different. A lot of people are the same, and yet a lot of people are different, and the lectures are different, too, on what you would learn from either one of them.
Got it. And how often do you all meet?
They meet once a month, and the Juno Garden Club meets the first Saturday of the month at the Valley Library. Great. And they try and get the big conference room in there. During the summer months, sometimes they'll do things a little different. They have a garden party out at the Arboretum. And they will go do individual tours of different people's gardens in the area, not on the same line as what a garden tour would be, but they do like a club tour for the members.
And I imagine you do lots of presentations like this Saturdays, right?
Success, yes, with succulents. Yes. So if you go on their website, which you've got it listed there and you can promote it, you can see what the upcoming information will be. And if you become a member, then they will email you out a invitation and reminder on a monthly basis on that. And so the meetings are open to the general public. The other way to find out would be to go on to the Valley Library's calendar that they have and look for that first Saturday of each month, and you could see what the presentation would be.
Okay, and you're going to be leading this one, right? Success with Succulents?
I am. We're going, the first one of the year, we're going to have a little business meeting, and then we will have our main topic, which is success with succulents. And a succulent is basically a plant that likes to hold water, and it has the capacity to retain moisture. So in a time of arid or drought, they can release that moisture. Well, we live in a rainforest, so it's not like we have a lot of plants around here that need to retain that. So growing in them here in Juneau is a little different. So some of the things that are succulents are a cactus. Most cactus are succulents, but not all succulents are cacti. So sedum, saxifrage, is another one that you see all over the Juneau area, but sedums, hens, and chicks, by the common names, are all plants that actually can be grown here. I wouldn't try cactus. That wouldn't be too successful. But the other ones you can actually grow here in the Juneau area, but there are tricks, and that's what we're going to be talking about, is what the tricks are, what you need to do differently in your garden if you want to grow succulents.
Do we happen to have any naturally occurring succulents?
I'm sure we do. They're found all over the place on every continent other than Antarctica. So I'm sure if you go up in the mountains, they are. Well, I know there are, because there's sedums that actually grow naturally around here, and some of the saxifrage that do, which are succulents.
Okay.
So.
All right. Can you give us a hint of one of your tricks that you're going to be talking about this Saturday?
I mulch with a lot of gravel. What I have found is my sedums and my succulents have a tendency in my yard to migrate towards the gravelly area. So a sedum, if you break it off, it just grows. It's like you don't. They're hard to kill unless you just really drown them. So good drainage. Mixing sand in with your soil would be another one, and mulch with gravel or small rocks.
So you're talking outside here. Where are your succulents right now? Are they outside?
Oh, they're outside.
Really?
I don't bring plants in the winter. No, they're going to have to survive outside, or they're not going to survive. So all my succulents are outside. They have a tendency to start turning different colors in the winter, and then they change back to their natural colors as spring and summer occurs. But they're all out there. A lot of them are mulched in gravel and rocks, and hanging out until it warms up a little. But good drainage. Key is good drainage.
You looking forward to when it warms up and you can get back out there?
I'm hoping for snow for skiing, but that's not happening. I am. It's kind of hard to start getting spring fever now, though, with so many months. Winter just started, so, you know, a few
snow
more months.
Snow first.
Yeah, hold the horses for a little while.
Okay. Can you give us the details on this Saturday workshop, please?
Sure. Saturday at the Valley Library, it'll be the big conference room when you first walk in. The time is from 3 to 5 o'clock, and you're welcome to bring sort of refreshments. Juneau Garden Club usually has coffee, tea, water there to drink. So if there's anything else that you would like to bring and contribute, that would be great. If you do decide that you'd like to join and get on that mailing list, they are going to Scott can see this. It's a wonderful little yearbook that they publish every year for the members. It has the phone numbers of everybody's in it and a little about the club. So if you wanted to get in on that, I believe there's still time, and the dues for that would be $10 to join for the year. So it's a great time to come and participate. We have men, women, wonderful people. So we'd like to encourage everybody to come out and check out the Juneau Garden Club.
Sounds good. For more information, is there a website people can go to, Facebook?
They could go to the website. It is Juneau-garden-club.com, and they can also call we just have new officers I'm going to give out. They could call, if they go on that site, they can either call Judy Neary or Nan Mundy, who are the co-presidents.
Okay. Well, Pat, thank you so much for coming on the show today. She's going to be leading Success with Succulents this Saturday from 3 to 5 at the Valley Library. Is that all right?
That's great.
Sounds good, Pat. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I hope everybody tries a succulent at some point in time and has success with it.
Thanks, Pat.
Thanks, Scott.
I went to a garden party to reminisce with my old friends. A chance to share old memories and play our songs again. When I got to the garden party, they all knew my name. No one recognized me. I didn't look the same. But it's all right now. I learned my lesson well. See, you can't please everyone, so you got to please yourself. People came from miles around, everyone was there. Yoko brought her warren, there was magic in the air. And over in the corner, much to my surprise, Mr. Hughes hidden did in shoes, wearing his disguise. But it's alright now, learn my lesson well. See, you can't please everyone, so you got to please yourself. La-da-da, la-da-da-da.
Played them all the old songs, thought that's why they came. No one heard the music, we didn't look the same.
I said hello to Mary Lou, she belongs to me. When I sang a song about a honky-tonk, it was time to leave. But it's alright now, I learned my lesson well. See, you can't please everyone, so you got to please yourself. La da da, la da da da. Someone opened up a closet door, and out stepped Johnny B. Goode, playing guitar like ringing a bell, and looking like he should. Gotta play at garden parties. I wish you a lot of love. But if memories were all I sang, I'd rather drive a truck. But it's alright now, I learned my lesson well. See, you can't please everyone, so you got to please yourself. La-da-da, la-da-da.
I learned my lesson well. See, you can't please everyone, so you got to please yourself.
There's a new way to listen to Morning Edition. Wait, wait, don't tell me. News around the world and all your favorite programs. Simply say, Alexa, play NPR, anytime you want to be updated or want good company. Try Alexa, play NPR.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, January 4th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host. We're right at the bottom of the hour. In the studio now is Claire Imamura and Andrew Washburn. They work over at the APK building. Welcome to the show, you two. Nice to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Scott.
Okay, we're going to be talking about a family fair sort of open house tomorrow. Is that right, Claire?
That's right. Yeah, we have activities for kids and families from all of our section, the library, archives, and museum. And they're inspired by our collections, and they're fun kind of creative craft activities for kids to do with their families.
Okay. What inspired you all to do this, Andrew?
Oh, well, Claire asked me. I've been offering to help with youth activities. It's something I've done in the past and something I enjoy doing. But as far as the overall vision is, it's all Claire. So
it's part of our youth activity program, and that's sponsored by the City and Borough of Juneau's Youth Activity Grant and run through our friends group, the Friends of the State Library, Archives, and Museum. And they support all kinds of programming, and this we usually have a guest artist who comes in and leads us kids in an activity that's related to their artwork, but this one is kind of generated in-house, so we'll see how it goes.
Okay, and what sort of age group are you aiming for tomorrow?
Well, it's open to any ages, but most of the activities are maybe like 6 to 12.
Okay, and great timing here at the end of sort of winter break, right? I don't think kids have school tomorrow.
Yeah, that's right. That's why we picked this Friday.
Excellent, excellent. So what are some of the crafts that you all will be participating in?
Well, I brought along a sample to show you, Scott, of the salmon.
Can you show our listeners?
Yeah, I would show you. I can describe it. The activity I'll be leading is make your own salmon can label. So for those of you familiar with historic canning operations in Alaska, the labels are often wonders of graphic design of the late 19th and earliest 20th century. And so we've got examples of different historic labels from the collection of the museum and the state library and templates for kids to make their very own fanciful graphics and that they get to take home on a real can.
Okay, that looks like fun. What else is going to be going on?
Well, we're bringing back Alaska Action Figures, which was designed by our previous youth activity coordinator, Lisa Galisic, and their chenille stem dolls and dogs and
super cool.
Yeah.
I was just looking
Andrew's
at them, and they're like, when I heard about it, I was like, well, that sounds all right. But they are so cool.
It's a really fun activity, and everyone loves it. One that I'm excited about is Make Your Own Stereogram, which is a kind of early 3D photography. We have a lot of them in the historical collections, and some of those are going to be available for viewing. So they're coming out of the vault, and you can come take a look at them through the 3D stereo viewers and then make your own setup. A scene, and then create your own stereograph card.
Oh, sounds like a lot of fun. I hope you don't mind. I would like to take a quick tangent before you two were coming on the show. I was asking you, how should we address this wonderful museum next door? Mm-hmm. Is it the SLAM? Is it the APK? Can you give us a quick lesson, please?
It is the Andrew P. Kashevaroff Building, and that is the name of the first His title was librarian
and curator,
mm-hmm. of what was, when it was conceived in the early part of the 20th century, was a library and museum. So the building is called, we call it APK for short.
Okay. And where does SLAM come from?
SLAM is the acronym for State Library, Archives, and Museum.
Okay.
And I think it's going to be a while before we get away from that name, and And it's fine. I think people understand what you mean when you say SLAM, and maybe even more so than APK, but as employees, we're supposed to be ushering in the APK.
Got it. So this event is at the APK building tomorrow.
Yeah. Thank you.
Got it. From 1 to 4, right?
Yeah, and it's a joint program with the library, archives, and museum.
And so that's interesting. So you are an outreach librarian, right, Claire?
That's right.
And Andrew, you are a museum registrar.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. So it's from 1 to 4. Is there a cost involved?
There's no cost. Okay. And it's you can come any time between the 1 and 4. You don't have to stay for all of 3 hours. And there's no registration required, so just come on by tomorrow afternoon.
All right. It sounds like a lot of fun. Is there anything else that either of you would like to add?
I think that covers it.
Yeah. All right. Hope to see you there.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show, you too.
Thanks, Scott.
This is Bird Note. Each season ushers in its own bounty of bird life. Winter is the best season to highlight North America's feathered thunderbolts, the falcons. Northern nesting species of falcons, like this peregrine we're hearing, move southward, closer to their many admiring observers. Hurtling through the air on blade-like wings, falcons rank among the fastest of all birds and the most adept at capturing prey in flight. One falcon much more prevalent across the U.S. in winter is the merlin. 10 inches tall with a 2-foot wingspan, the merlin chases down small birds from sparrows to sandpipers. Small but powerful, the fearless merlin will buzz even a huge eagle that enters its airspace. The majestic jeer falcon drifts south in winter to the northern tier of states. Larger than a red-tailed hawk, in a direct sprint, the jeer falcon can overtake even the fastest duck. The mid-sized peregrine falcon nests in some locales across the country, but its numbers are greatest in winter, especially near the coasts. During its dive on a hapless pigeon or dunlin, a peregrine may reach an airspeed approaching 200 miles an hour. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Support for Bird Note comes from Bloomsbury, announcing the new book Winter Birds, with paintings by artist and ornithologist Lars Johnson, available wherever books are sold.
Enjoy a marvelous evening of martinis and Mozart, two of life's greatest pleasures. William Ransom, pianist and artistic director of Juno Jazz and Classics, and renowned pianist Julie Coucheron will be performing some favorite works by Mozart for four-handed piano. The festival schedule will be announced and be one of the first to purchase tickets. See you at the Jack, Sunday, January 14th at 7 p.m. Tickets at jazzandclassics.org, the Jack, and Hearthside Books. This promises to be one magical evening. Don't miss it.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon.
There's a new way to listen to Morning Edition. Wait, wait, don't tell me. News around the world and all your favorite programs. Simply say, Alexa, play NPR, anytime you want to be updated or want good company. Try Alexa, play NPR.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, January 4th. About 20 minutes until the top of the hour, and it's time for our weekly edition of Arts Up. Nancy DeCherney, welcome to the show, Nancy.
Thank you. Happy New Year, everyone.
And we are upon another First Friday.
It is. That happened so suddenly like that.
Right.
So start off by coming over to the Jack and getting the little flyer. There's a lot of things going on this First Friday. We have a wonderful exhibit that Rachel Usler has curated. It's called Symbiosis, and it's based on the photographs by Mark Hieronymus. He's an Alaska fishing guide. It's all about fish, and there's all like the Julie Crabtree tree, Katie Craney, Sean Fansler, Trevor Gong, Melissa Griffiths, Mark Hieronymus, Rachel, Kevin Meyer, Lorelei Maiko, Jenna Ofontanella, Heather Ridgway, Rob Royce, Christine Schmale, I'm not sure I'm saying her name correctly, I'm sorry, and Melina Shields and Leah Sturgis have all put stuff in, and I love shows that have lots of artists in it because it's so colorful and different.
There's a lot of talent in those names right there.
There is. There's just a lot of really cool stuff in it. By the way, side note, just want to send a shout out, a thanks to the Juno Real Estate people for sponsoring that show. So you just talked with the APK folks, so you know there's a lot of things going on over there for the First Friday. They have a wonderful exhibit. COPA has Trees, Trees, Lots of Trees by Jim Fowler, and I'm not sure what kind of ice cream they're going to feature. So who knows, maybe spruce
tip.
Mark. We'll see.
You never hear about hemlock ice cream, right?
Well, it comes with a bad name.
Yeah, right?
Pine, maybe. I don't know. Juno Douglas City Museum has Seeing Faces by Abel Ryan and Discover Tech. There's two exhibits, and they are open from 4:30 till 7. Seeing Faces, Abel is a carver, and he's been working on a lot of different things. He studied with Jack Hudson of Metlakatla. Anyway, his new and older pieces, mostly masks, but go check that out. Discover Tech is about the construction of Juno Douglas bridges and the Capitol. So, cool. All of those of you who like Legos and all those other little build-it things, go see that. Anyway, let's see. We're moving on. Alaska Robotics has Welcome to the Eldorado Forest. I'm probably not pronouncing that either correctly. Lumbering dinosaur bears, mysterious anthropomorphic corvids, and nimble blacktail archers. Sounds like it's going to be very fun, as all things at Alaska Robotics are. There's a fantasy game, and it begins this First Friday. The game runs through 2018, so get your start up now. Annie Kales is having Annie's Attic Sale. Always lots of fun at the end of the holiday season. It's an annual tradition, so head on down to that. Shoefly is having A Story in Every Bag, upcycled one-of-a-kind designs, three-peak design bags, and this is only at First Friday. Rainy Retreat has Marion Call and Laura Zahosky doing music. And you know, Dames just moved in that section of the block, so you just stop in. I don't know that they're doing anything particular, but you should stop in there and see what's going on. Barnaby Brewing has Trish Turner Custard Cast Off, a photo story. It'll be displayed in the brewery this month. It's about an abandoned chair. Who knows? Rainforest Yoga has a free yoga class with Lindsay Bloom from 5:15 to 6:15. Juno Artist Gallery is doing their annual artist search, so if you're interested in being part of the co-op, it's a good time to stop in and find out how you do that and what's all involved. Harbor Tea and Spice has Much Ado About Oil, and artist Glenn Oyard on this. A lot of names I need to get the right pronunciation for. I apologize. So they'll be tasting olive oils and balsamic vinegar, so stop in there. There are some things coming up. For all of you who are members of the Arts Council, members of KTOO, jazz and classics, you can get 50% off your Mozart and Martini's tickets. That's going to be on January 14th with Will Ransom and Julie Cochereau. You have to call the office to get that 50% off thing. There is a dinner and jazz. Let's just switch over to this thing right here. We have Crimson Bear Hockey happening on Friday night, too, over at Treadwell Arena. The Garden Club we already talked about. Saturday is a dinner and jazz fundraiser for the JDHS Jazz Band at 6 p.m. There is a live improv at Goldtown Nickelodeon, 9:15 on Saturday night. We have pickleball on Monday at Centennial Hall, in case you need something to do at lunchtime, don't we all? There's a CBJ Herlock property open house, looking for people to take that on. That's on Monday. Eat well, live well at the public library from 6 to 7:30. It's probably good advice for all of us right now after the holidays. I think that's about it for what we want to do. There's a candlelight ceremony remembering people lost to addiction on January 10th, Wednesday, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Northern Lights. Coming up, though, there's a lot of things. There's a toga party. You need to get your tickets for that. There's a Conbrio concert coming. We have art glasses you can make tea towels with the Frost and Fur folks.
Wow. So, Nancy, I was not able to get all of that.
But your shorthand didn't work?
I was trying to write all those down. Where can I see all of this?
You can get all the details at jahc.org or ktoo.org. Get phone numbers and all that sort of stuff, how to get involved, and way more things than we could even get to here. So we have a busy place. You know, we're number 6 in the creative vitality in the United States for cities. Out of 930 cities around the country, we're studied, and Juneau comes in number 6.
No kidding.
We're right behind Santa Fe. Challenge on.
Nancy the Attorney here with our weekly installment of Arts Up. Nancy, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Do you have stories and life experiences related to the Juneau Indian Village, often called the Willoughby District? What about the Douglas Village? Or family memories related to downtown Juneau history? If you do, the Arts Council wants to hear from you. The Juneau Histories Theater Project is seeking participants to share stories in a community performance this spring. The deadline to let the Arts Council know that you're interested is January 10th, coming up soon. Go to jahc.org and scroll to the bottom to find the call for stories. Or call the Arts Council at 586-2787.
The Juno Arts and Humanities Council with KTOO Public Media present Art Glasses. Monthly, not your typical sip and paint glasses, the second Thursday of each month. January's featured artist is Jessica Hanlon of Frost and Fur. Jessica will ably guide us in creating custom hand-painted tea towels, not just one, but two tea towels, on January 11th from 5:30 to 7:30 at the Hangar Ballroom. All supplies included and no host bar. Tickets on sale now at KTOO, the Jack, and JAHC.org.
You're tuned in to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, January 4th, 2018, about 10 minutes till the top of the hour. Few extra minutes here on the show today, so let's listen to a Mudrooms. Here's Jonathan Smith from the November edition of Mudrooms.
Jonathan Smith has been a high school science teacher at Juno Douglas High School for the past 24 years. I know some of you were his students because you flinched when I said his name. He's not allowed to do any flaming experiments in here. He came to Juno quite accidentally, as will become clear tonight. This is his third time up to bat at Mudrooms, and he's hoping to at least make it to first base with you, metaphorically speaking.
The year is 1992, and I had just completed my first year of teaching out in Holy Cross, Alaska on the Yukon River, and I thought that I would never teach again. It was a very difficult experience. So I came out of Holy Cross. I had a pocket full of money for a young guy, and I bought myself a motorcycle. I was up in Fairbanks, and a friend of mine, a guy named Chuck, said he wanted to go on a trip with me. So I had planned a trip all the way down to Mexico, and he said he would go as far as the exotic lands of Juno, which I had never been to. And so we set out from Fairbanks and came down here to Juno. And it was right around the 4th of July, and I met up with some friends that I knew from Fairbanks. And one of those friends, a woman named Kelda Denton, her sister lives over there on 10th Street, and they were having their 4th of July party, which I was invited to. Now, remember, I know nothing about Juno. It was my first time here, and I was just kind of into it. I kind of liked the place. But I was young and restless and trying to figure out who I was, and I was on this motorcycle trip. But anyway, so we're having this 4th of July party, and it's right over there near Goldstream, right over here. And I'm looking over there at Goldstream, and there's people going by in the sluice. And this is 1992, and they used to still do this stupid thing. They would get on different, rubber rafts or whatnot, get up in Cope Park, and then just go, come down to the sluice and then head down into the ocean down there. And as a 23-year-old guy, I'm looking at that going, hey, that looks fun. And both my friend Hallie and Kelda and their parents said, no, you don't want to do that. That water is really cold. And by the way, you have a ferry to catch in an hour. And I said, no, that's not important. I want to go in the sluice. So then they said, you don't have anything to go down with. And I said, it doesn't matter. I want to go in the sluice. So I went up to Cope Park and I stuck out my finger like this. And I waited, and within a short period of time, a young Coast Guard guy, a big, muscly dude, came up with this really big, round inner tube. What it was, actually, was the tube from a survival raft, but it didn't have any of the visqueen in it. It was just the tube. And he was out in that little pond there, that little holding pond before the the waterfall, if you can call it a waterfall, and he was trying to hold the thing together in the shape of a canoe so he could sit on top of it and hold it together. And he was having a really hard time, and I know he damn well saw me with my finger out like this, and he kept on looking away from me. But after a while, he realized that he wasn't able to hold the thing together by himself because it was too wide. And so reluctantly, he motioned me over, and he said, okay, you get on the back and just hold it together and don't do anything. I said, okay, so I'm on the back of the thing, I'm holding the thing together, and he's on the front, and we're, you know, kind of paddling a little bit forward. And that thing that they call a waterfall is just an 8-foot sheer drop off of cement into, you know, about 2 inches of water. And so we come flying off of that thing, and of course the rubber raft just immediately opened up into a big circular. And I don't know how it happened, but I ended up holding on to it, but now I'm being dragged backwards on the back of this thing, trying not to undo this guy's pleasant experience up at the front, because he made it very clear that he didn't want to hear from me. Anyway, so I'm going backwards down this thing, and we're going pretty fast. That water was moving pretty darn fast. And I'm thinking, okay, I can do this. Although I knew that there were rocks at the end, and that was the big problem. I had been warned about the rocks at the end. So a couple of seconds go by, and then another problem started happening. My pants started inching down. But I knew that I couldn't pull up my pants and hold on to the tube at the same time, and I needed the tube to save me from the rocks. So, yeah, eventually the pants and the underwear made it around my ankles. And that's when I discovered those really cool bridges that go over Gold Creek. And it was 4th of July, and everybody had cameras. For the men in the audience, yeah, the water was really, really cold. Anyway, we got down to the end, and I'm just trying to survive. We got down to the end, the rubber raft hit a bunch of the rocks, and I just kind of got thrown up onto the side, into the grass, pulled my pants up, ran back to my friend's house, and she goes, you got a half an hour to get to the ferry. I got on my motorcycle, I was freezing. And I made it out to the ferry, and I'd already fallen in love with Southeast. I fell in love with the ferry, and I thought, you know, I have just exposed myself to all of Juneau. And I have come to realize that, yeah, I want to live there someday.
That's Jonathan Smith from his November Mudroom Storytelling. You can listen to that story and get more information on Mudrooms at mudrooms.org. Here on the Juno afternoon tomorrow, Andy Klein will be your host, and he'll be talking with Byron McGilvray and Lena Simmons about this weekend's Midwinter Vocal Festival. Singer-songwriter Marion Call will preview her performance at First Friday in Rainy Day Books. Katrina Wolford will highlight the upcoming Northwards Writer Symposium, and we'll get the details for First Saturday Improv with guest Arthur Starbuck. The forecast for tonight calls for rain, lows in the mid-30s, east wind to 10 miles per hour. Friday rain, highs around 40, east winds to 10 miles per hour. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon.